And then the other thing is trying to encourage you to do this type of research as you investigate what's going on your own networks. So a brief outline, a threat, and we'll look at sort of turning the threat on its head and using it as a resource once you've identified a threat. And then talk about building a method to do this with vis-a-vis China, maybe the Middle East, so you can take it in different directions. And then we'll talk about the law and where international law stands on the subject. So with Russia, very strong in math and science. They have a history in the Cold War of looking at America through a certain lens and taking our products apart, no matter what they may be. If you talk to Russians, they have a healthy culture of reverse engineering in general. They've assured me that when you're growing up in a Russian household and your lamp breaks or your toilet doesn't flush, you don't just pick up the phone and call somebody. You try to figure out how to fix it yourself first. And so this lends to a hacker culture that is strong. The other thing is the economy may not be quite where it needs to be. This is also true in a country like Egypt that has a great university system, good education, but just not nearly enough jobs to fill the graduates that come out. And so they may move into other areas of the economy. So if you just look, this is a brief slide. You know, we think Windows is expensive, and we think Microsoft Office is expensive. But I mean, if it was, you know, if it costed you a month's salary, you can kind of imagine, your willingness to pay for it at that point. Probably not too likely. Cybercrime. Okay, there's a long history of cybercrime from Russia. Vladimir Levin in the mid 1990s. Manipulated Citibank's cash management system over 40 times, taking $10 million out of it. So it's one of the few cases, though, of a successful bilateral joint law enforcement operation. And what happened was they got most of that money back, but they never did figure out how he did it, how he got in to begin with. The Microsoft source code hack, again, went back to St. Petersburg. This guy named Joy Lopez in Florida recently, very interesting case. What happened with him? Core flood virus. So he's got a Trojan on his system. Somebody logs in from a couple of former Soviet Union states, and they take about $90,000 out of his account, ship it back to Latvia. Now, the problem with Joe Lopez was that they had his legitimate login and password, and he didn't have that much of a case. Bank of America told him, they said, look, it's not our fault. It's your computer that was hacked. Somebody logged in with your password and moved the money. So he turned around and said, look, I don't know anybody in the former Soviet Union, and you should know that malicious code is out there, and you should know that large transfers to suspect countries, you know, you should alert the client. In any case, it's a sticky situation because it's his box that was hacked and not the bank's. This guy, you may or may not remember, he spoke 4 years ago in Apollo over here. And I saw his presentation just before he was arrested by the FBI. And essentially, he was for $99 offering you a program that would remove all copyright, all copy, paste, edit, read restrictions on ebook, Adobe product. And so he was working for a Chicago firm at the time, and this got really messy because the EFF got involved, and nobody wanted the bad PR, least of all Adobe, or the United States government, whose law enforcement agencies also employed Elcomsoft, which was the company that hired Dmitry and made the product. So with a lot of these cases, again, there's just a few fish in the sea that get arrested, but usually not too much happens with them. What I want to suggest here is if you have a true zero-day exploit, you can turn that into cash. And this is what the Russians are doing now. They've got a great sort of a bag of tricks, and what they're doing through internet worms like Bagel and MyDoom, they're compromising your systems, and what they're doing is just lifting off the financial information. So related to PayPal, related to eBay, it's usually not for distributed denial of service, it's usually not for spam, although it can be, but what they want is your personal financial information, and they take advantage of an exploit to increase revenue. So millions of credit cards. Last year in England, where there is money, you will see a lot of interesting activity. So with international gambling, if they're offline for a couple hours, that's a whole lot of money that they're going to be losing. So with the distributed denial of service attacks versus the international gambling, they typically would hit them with maybe a sin flood, followed by a letter which said, look, we can take you offline if you don't pay us, say, $50,000 a week, which is not much for international gambling. By the way, the Sands Institute estimates that about 7,000 companies at any given time are paying extortion money to some online attacker. But in this case, again, there were some arrests made, and one success story from last year. Here is a case which is really very important for a couple reasons. One, it was so severe that Microsoft changed its normal patch schedule, which was pretty rigid, and they were willing to come out with patches around their normal schedule. And two, the U.S. CERT advised at least the folks who work in Washington, D.C., Beltway area in the United States government to not use IE, to use something else, or at the very least disable JavaScript. But what happens here, again, with the internet worms out there likely compromising Microsoft IIS, then taking advantage of holes in IE to redirect you invisibly to this IP address in China that would download a keylogger onto your system and basically pull off financial information, credit card and PayPal and eBay and the like. So Russian malware really falls under every kind of category, you know, from backdoor to downloader to spam tool. So they fall into every category. Social engineering, okay? There's a social engineering aspect in any good attack. And with Russians, they've got a very powerful one. In a lot of people are looking for girlfriends. They're looking for love, right? And so Russians taking advantage of this. I'll just tell you a couple of stories. There's a Canadian guy who had his Russian girlfriend and was sending her a lot of money, and it was the way it transpired. It made it very easy for this man. Okay, he had a virtual girlfriend, Alfia Matveyeva, I think. So he could go into a virtual store and buy her virtual gifts and get email back from her thanking for all this great attention. The problem was there was no store, there was no gifts, and there was no girlfriend. It was just a couple in Russia that had this scam going. They made about $300,000 on it. And, of course, they would write emails all day long saying, I love you, thank you very much. So there was another case in which an Australian man wrote to Vladimir Putin directly, and he said, look, I've been looking for my girlfriend, I even went to Russia, couldn't find her, can you help me? There was an arrest made in that case as well. But it's a big problem, because it's playing on some of the basic human needs, right? But the U.S. Embassy in Moscow gets about 10 calls a day complaining of somebody not being able to find their online girlfriend. So criminal communication, okay, it can start in public web forums. I'll show you one here, and then we'll jump back. So there's public spaces in which if you own, proxies or you're a money launderer, that kind of thing, you can put teasers out there in public web forums. Okay, so then you can contact somebody, and then they become closed, and you need, registration, and you need recommendations and that kind of thing.